right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Thought Crimes, the podcast where no topics are off limits. If you or I or Jason learn even one thing today, then I think we've accomplished our mission. So before we begin with today's topic, Jason, what is up with you?
Morning, man. Nice to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure.
This week, it's I'll kind of continue what where we left off last week. I'm still pulling double duty at work, and it's very intricate, but I'm enjoying it. I'm learning a lot, and I'm in a leadership role at the moment, and it's something that there's a lot of learning, but personally, I feel like I'm adapting well to it, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it's going to keep going.
But just I'll leader.
Just bored to lead. There you go. But it's fun, right? Like you do things well, you do things poorly. You try to learn from your mistakes. You're not going to get everything right, but it's one of those things that I'm comfortable in it. So it's not like I'm shying away from the difficulties. And, you know, I make mistakes every day, just like everyone. I make a ton at work. But, yeah, I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it's going to go.
Cool. Well, keep that extreme ownership going.
Yeah, actually, I brought that exact processes to a meeting this week. We had a very large four-hour meeting that I won't get into the details of. But when it came to leadership, I brought up, and I name-dropped Jocko. So I was like, look, this is one of the principles that I think that we should live by, and it's one thing that we have not been doing. And this is how I intend to apply it. And it got good reactions. All right, man. How about you? How's your week? What's new?
Not much. What is new with me? Yeah, not much. Work is steady. End of fiscal. So, you know, some busy moments.
Well, you're living the COVID life right now, eh? Like you're working from home and been doing that for about a year now.
Yeah, it's weighing on me, I gotta say. People always ask, you know, how's working from home? Working from home's not bad if the rest of the world was open, right? So if I can do my own thing, work my hours at home, in the comfort of my own home, that's fine. But the fact that I can't go outside and other things are normal, or, you know, be allowed to go to bar, party, gym, whatever it may be, or travel, that makes it hard, because it makes every day feel exactly like the last. And weekends and weekdays even blend together a little bit too much for my liking.
And I think that's one of the more insidious things about this. It's kind of that long, slow moral and mental degradation of people that are living the same life that you are right now. And in my humble opinion, just makes them all the more vulnerable to whatever's coming next.
Yeah, I think it's after a year, it's important for people to keep that mental fortitude and really try to not feel an onset of nihilism. Try to resist that whole, you know, what's the difference between today and tomorrow? What do I have to look forward to? All this stuff. Try to my advice is really try to think of things to care about, and whether that's, you know, maintaining your health, mental and physical, working out, go running, do some exercise. It always helps. And start little projects around the house, or around your apartment. Get good at something, learn a language, an instrument, maybe build something. That's a lot of what I do around this house.
I think our productivity podcast really touched a lot on that one. And for someone who might be feeling kind of the winter blues, but COVID version, I think keeping yourself accountable, doing a list, snowballing, all the things that we talked about in the previous episode, are very applicable for someone in that case.
Yeah, exactly. So if you haven't already, go check that one out. It's called Productivity.
Yeah, and we'll do a little bit more on that. We kind of scratched the surface, shot out a couple ideas, and hopefully it gave you an extra tool or two. But as we go forward, we're going to go a little bit deeper into that sort of thing, give you something a little bit more actionable to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. Today we're going to talk about something a little, I guess, lighter and fun, a passion and background that both Jason and I have. Jason, what's on the docket today?
Matt, we're doing men's fashion. I love this one. Like, since we've been kids, like you grew up in a fashion family. I've worked in it. We've both loved it since we were little guys. We have similar styles, and we both kind of play off each other's styles. And man, I can't wait to get into this one. And for those that are listening on a podcast format, if you go on the YouTube format, you'll see some images that will represent well what we're speaking of.
Yeah, we'll talk about the different kind of archetype and masculine styles out there later in the podcast. So we'll try to demonstrate a few of those examples visually.
Yeah. So we base this around, we needed a bit of a framework to kind of run with. So we based it off the work of Tanner Guzzi, who is a fashion expert, a style expert. Go find his work. He is excellent. Masculinestyle.com is his website. And you're going to see in greater detail what we're going to speak about today. But hopefully we at least pique your curiosity and give you a little bit of base knowledge and something you can run with. But check out Tanner Guzzi, check out masculinestyle.com, and you'll get a lot more in depth there. All right, so basically, men's fashion is a little bit different than women's fashion. Men's fashion has a lot more to do with your place in society. Women's fashion tends to be a little bit more accentuating their form and their figure. But for men, it has a lot to do with your profession, your social status, your ability to provide, and it kind of represents what you do. Now, obviously, there's ways to play with this, but in large parts, that's where your style comes from. And one thing we're going to speak a lot about is congruency. So you're going to want your style to be very congruent with who you are, what you do, and what you bring to the table.
Yeah, you don't want to be a fraud or feel very uncomfortable in something you're wearing just because you think it's the thing to wear nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. Congruency is key in all things, in your speech, in your body language, in your style, and in your comportment. Always be congruent with what's going on. So Tanner identifies three masculine styles, and I completely agree with these. And it makes it simple, right? You're a guy, you got one or three to pick from, and then kind of add spice with the other two. So your three are rugged, refined, and rakish. Will, when I say those three archetypes, what comes to mind?
Rugged, blue collar, lumberjack, carpenter. That's what I think of when you say rugged.
So like more like a tradesman, someone who works with his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Utilitarian, like clothes you can wear that not only look, typically masculine, but are also, the fashion or the clothes you're wearing are there for a utilitarian purpose. They're made to be to help you or protect you from whatever you're doing or working on.
And it's almost like you know what you're talking about. That's exactly what it is. So we'll get into like the fabrics and everything, but a rugged archetype is exactly that. Someone whose clothes are meant to do work. It could be military. It could be leathers. It could be a tradesman, anyone who's going to want fabrics that are thicker, that are more resistant to weather, weather wear, just getting worn down.
Blades.
What's that?
Blades sometimes.
Yeah.
Protect you from blades.
And all these things are going to go into the rugged archetype. So let's talk a little bit about some fabrics. You're going to see heavy cottons. You're going to see thicker weaves. You're going to see denims. Jeans is a big part of the rugged archetype. You might see some flannels as long as it's not ironically done with a man bun. Looking at you, hipsters. Camouflage, that's not so much a fabric, but it's a style. If I didn't say leathers, leather. So all these things that are really harder and they're going to take a big beating.
I think historically too, you mentioned flannel, which, back in the day you have tartan too.
Yeah, so wolves. Kind
of wolves you see on the Scots in the Highlands, that's very utilitarian. You got the kilts, but wool is so versatile and very much rugged.
So when we talk about rugged, is there any images that come to mind for you?
Specific examples?
People? Yeah, like some pop culture examples that's like, if you just say it, like someone could picture it and see what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I knew this question was coming, so I tried to identify a few a while back. And my go-to, I think we discussed this earlier in another episode, my go-to masculine archetype, my exemplar of masculinity to me is Indiana Jones. So Indiana Jones in his adventurous archaeologist outfit would be to me very rugged. He's got that hat, that whip, that belt, I don't know what kind of shirt you'd call it, but I guess kind of a utilitarian shirt.
Well, it's a button down, either most likely cotton shirt, right? But yeah, it's not perfectly pressed. It's a little bit crinkled. You can tell it's been worn outside, but you got the buttons. It's not buttoned all the way up to the collar, right? You got the collar button, probably two buttons on the way down that are open. It lets out the form and the function there is for ventilation and for heat, right? But also shows his physicality. It's a very aggressive kind of look.
Yeah. So he's one of my big go-tos for that rugged archetype. Another one, more in the, well, also fantastic, world is, Aragorn. He's a good example of a rugged man, from Lord of the Rings. To present a few different ones, Geralt, I don't know if you've ever played, The Witcher.
No,
or
man,
have watched The Witcher.
As you know, I'm partial to Skyrim.
But you can't see the character in Skyrim, right?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can go third person. Okay.
See, I never played Skyrim, but I played Witcher and also became big on like the Netflix show, played by Henry Cavill. Anyways, also a fantastic world, but very much a rugged individual. I put one for the ladies, Ryan Gosling in The Notebook. That's partly why he's loved so much by the ladies, I would say. He's kind of this poor blue collar guy who works at a lumberyard. So he's got that, that not only old fashioned look, but that rugged look for back in the day. Any examples from you?
Let's see. Bruce Springsteen in his Born the USA tour, kind of the ripped shirt. Yeah, denims, ripped shirt. The only thing that's not rugged about his style in this, and that's a little bit more rakish, is how tight the jeans are. Because and it's not meant as a dig to him, but a rugged archetype, it's all about function, right? So if you're going to dress like an auto mechanic or just a guy who's working on his car on a sunny Sunday afternoon, you're not going to be wearing skin tight jeans because you want to be able to bend. You want to be able to crouch and fit under the car and do what you have to do. So that's the only part of that look that's a little bit more towards the rakish. But that idea of just denim, you know, an open collar shirt, even just a grimy t-shirt and a nice leather belt is very rugged. And then you can add the accentuation, like the handkerchief in the back pocket. As long as it's not ironic, it's actually something that you put there for a function because you are working on the car, so you do need to wipe your hands off. As long as it's there for a purpose, it's rugged. And that's really the key for the rugged archetype is nothing is there for show. Everything is there for a reason. It happens to look very strong and masculine because it has a reason to be there.
There's also, you identified military, like kind of anything military can be seen as rugged. I always think of, and it's always a look I like. I still think it works really well today it could be just jeans. And that's like the basic kind of, dark green, GIT, like the t-shirt that I find goes well with almost everything and always looks like that classic kind of rugged manly top that you can wear.
Yeah, and that t-shirt usually is form-fitting. It's not excessively tight. It allows plenty of movement, but it also it's there to work. And on if it's worn by a man who's well built, it's going to look rugged.
Right.
So rugged, it's all about function. It's not about style. It's all about your presence and your ability to get shit done. So want to move on to
the next style?
Refined. Now this one is completely different than rugged. Whereas your rugged man, we covered it. It's all about what you can do with your hands and your physicality. The refined man, it's all about your influence. It has to be the easiest style to describe. Just think your suit guy. That's what it is.
Classy.
Classy, refined. What you're wearing, you won't fix a car with, you're not going to change a tire with, it will get it dirty, but that's what you're signaling. You're signaling that you don't do that kind of stuff, that you pay people to do it for you, that you can, that within your circle of influence, you have other people who take care of the physical things for you. So you're showing leadership, you're showing higher social status is really the idea of the refined man.
Yeah, and I'd say that's another look that typically it's funny of the three style types for men, from the women I've spoken to, they either typically prefer a man wearing just jeans and a t-shirt, which would be pretty rugged, I guess, basic rugged, or they prefer the man in a full suit or tux, which is very much the exemplar refined. So what are examples of folks, real or fiction, that you'd say are good examples of refined, stylish men?
I mean, pick a guy who wears a suit, right? I won't poach all the examples that we have here, but I'll just take one. The obvious one, James Bond. So especially the classic Connery James Bond, even the Pierce Brosnan James Bond. Just, it's a man who is still in command, who is in charge. And James Bond is quite rugged also, just through his actions. But his style is very much refined. It's more form-fitting. It's a little bit more restrictive. You'll be using materials that are richer, so finer wools, linens, lighter weaves, that sort of thing. But pick your archetype of the suit guy, Harvey Specter from Suits. I mean, the show is called Suits, right? So there you go. Sure. That kind of guy. How about you, man?
Yeah, I like John Wick. Recently, easily one of my favorite kind of trilogies nowadays, because it's a good action movie, and it doesn't try to be anything else but, and they do a really good job. So yeah, Keanu Reeves as John Wick, I think, is a good refined style as well. And then for Lol's, Archer, which you're a fan of.
Yeah.
He doesn't act very refined, but he wears those tactical turtlenecks all the time, you know?
Man,
very refined.
Never bash a tactical neck. But and with refined, one of the dangers, I would say, and a lot of guys that are, you know, learning about fashion and that want to start to dress better, this is often the archetype that they'll first go towards, because you think men's fashion, you think suit. They'll go over the top, right? I've seen you'll see this at prom all the time, like a guy who wants to go out with a cane, just because it looks cool. But the thing is, you can use a cane and wear a suit, but do it when you actually need to have a cane, because you're elderly and your knees let go, right? That sort of thing. Or you'll wear excessive accoutrements, like you'll wear a collar bar under your tie when you really have no reason to.
Right.
Or you'll excessive. But you know what I mean, right? Like, guys will tend to overdo it a little bit.
Or it's almost on the, it's refined on, it's on the way to being excessive and or rakish to some point as well, if you start kind of on almost bedazzling your formal wear too much.
Yeah. So subtlety is key. You know, the quality of the craftsmanship, the fit, all these things are key. And Will and me both understand, like, if I toot our own horns, we understand the refined style quite well, because I've worked in it and Will comes from a family that's dealt in it. So we'll get a little bit deeper into some do's and don'ts of that once we get to the next section here. Right. So do you want to lead off the final archetype?
Sure. So rakish, I would say, is the, to an extent, I guess, the most uncommon style, or the one that's a bit harder to describe for folks. And rakish would be a good example of rakish styles typically come from folks like rock stars. They could be bright colors. They could be unorthodox pairings of things. They could be a mix of very baggy with very tight. So it could be tight pants with I'm thinking Kanye West is a good example. He kind of brought in the tight pants, however, with the very long and excessively large t-shirts, and then would layer his jackets and sweaters to be shorter than his t-shirt. So it's kind of like breaking the rules in a way, but knowing that you're doing it. So that's why I would say it's the not necessarily the most complex of the three styles, but the hardest to kind of describe and grasp. Another thing I would say is it borders often on the metrosexual or even the effeminate sometimes. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
The rakish is all about blurring the lines and breaking the rules. So it's like you said, it's the maverick, it's the independent, it's the guy who's singling that I work outside of the formal structures. Whereas the refined guy, what he says is, I've climbed to the top of the pyramid of the hierarchy of structure. The rakish guy is the one who says, to hell with your structure, I'm going to do my own thing.
And I would say to the folks that usually, I guess the folks we know that pull off rakish very well are the folks that have an immense amount of status, hence rock stars, actors, musicians, that kind of thing.
And so like the perfect examples are Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Like that is rakish to a T, and Johnny Depp. Those are the classic rakish archetypes.
And Jack Sparrow, and both on and off camera would be very rakish.
And for your fabrics, anything and everything goes, right? It's you're really letting your personality shine through. You're showing that you're different than the masses. So as long as you're respecting some stylistic rules that things don't look, you know, completely bad on you, being able to artfully and tastefully put together things that shouldn't go together is the rakish way to go.
I would say too, sometimes rakish is when you see a very person of great status, like a rock star, you'll have like a large part of the population saying like, what the hell is he wearing? It looks silly. But then most people will say he's Steven Tyler or he's Mick Jagger. He can wear whatever the hell he wants. That's rakish.
Right. So yeah, I think that covers rakish pretty well. Will, what's the next thing you want to hit?
Well, I just wanted to highlight, we actually both took the quiz and this is found on the same website you mentioned at the beginning, right? MasculineStyle.com, where you can take the quiz to see if kind of what's your dominant style, right? So is it rugged, refined, or rakish? So we took it a while back, and Jason and I both ended up with pretty similar scores. We're both rugged. So it's a slight edge to rugged, and refined would be our second closest.
Yeah, I'd say like 50% rugged, 40% refined, 10% rakish for each of us. And what's really important to notice here is that you're going to have a dominant style from whatever your congruency with your personality, your lot in life, your profession. And that's where you're going to want to live. You're mostly going to want to be with that style, but you're going to want to show dimension. And we'll get a little bit deeper into that when we get into our tips and tricks. But if you're the refined guy, don't be afraid to throw a little rakish in there. Don't be afraid to open up your collar so you got a little bit more of that rugged look. You're going to want to show layers, because if people can put you into one single box, they got you figured out. You always want to have some intrigue to you, and you always want to have some dimension.
Right. While staying true to yourself and comfortable in your own cloths, because that's one thing. And I think we've all been there, especially when you're in that awkward teenage phase or slightly older and you're just gaining your confidence. It is tough sometimes to try and figure out your style and feel comfortable with it, or trying to be a little stylish, a bit more poppy than anyone else, stick out a little bit. But while doing that, you don't have the confidence yet and you feel like a fraud. So it does take some time. It takes some experimenting with what feels both, you know, comfortable on you, both physically and mentally, I guess. So yeah, well, let's do our quick recurring segment now called Canceled.
Finish him.
So Jason, what do you think will be canceled next?
Man, they haven't canceled Pokemon yet, and it's basically like PETA, like on steroids. Okay. Over here. I'm gonna take this little like peaceful little creature. I'm gonna make it fight to within an inch of its life for sport,
and then trap it in a ball,
and then like enslave it in a ball. Like how is Pokemon still around?
You're right. That's a really good one. I hadn't thought about that. Pokemon, yeah, and you got. Yeah, every game except for Pokemon Snap. Actually, Pokemon Snap was about taking pictures of
fun.
Pokemon in the wild. But other than that, it's all about finding Pokemon, fighting them until they're so weak that you trap them, and then own them, and then you get to fight them against other people who did the same thing.
And you can even like store them in the computer and just forget about them, because somehow that's possible.
Yeah, there's this weird digital thing that worked, where it's like these are real creatures, like as if they were real, like squirrels and foxes outside, but you can trap them digitally into things. So yeah, maybe that's why it won't be canceled.
Japan's a like strange place, man.
yeah. Well, it worked, man. Those pocket monsters sold. Man, that was a phenomenon when we were kids.
Dude, I still like Pokemon, in all honesty.
Like, I mean, it's pretty cool.
Like the games are a lot of fun.
Yeah, Jason and I were like in the golden age of Pokemon, though. I think we were about grade 4 when it really took off, like the cards. And remember, because of Pokemon, like card shops existed. They don't exist anymore. Of course, there are some card shops, but remember they'd like pop up in every mall. They'd be at fairs, like all of these things. And that was all really because of Pokemon.
Yeah, man. So how about you? What's getting canceled next?
I've just been on my mind lately, so I'll go more political. I like yours though. I'll say Bernie Sanders.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah. I think Bernie Sanders will be canceled. I think he's too rich for preaching all that socialist talk.
Well, he went from the millionaires and the billionaires to just the billionaires because now he's a millionaire.
Exactly. So he might be canceled. He's an old white dude, and he's lost every time now. And he's also kind of bowed to the institution every time. So yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go with Bernie Sanders. Who knows though? This is all speculative, but, there's no consistency to any of this. So I think, either of us could be very right tomorrow.
No. So welcome to clown world, dress like a clown, be rakish, have fun.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Yeah. So now we're going to second half of this episode. We'll have some fun here, and it's going to be a rapid fire round where both Jason and I will ask each other questions, not questions we've really prepared or we know what the other one's going to ask, but all related to style and men's fashion and what our thoughts are on certain things. But just before we go through that, not that we necessarily need to, but Jason, let's talk a bit more detail on what our background and I guess authority in men's fashion is. So Jason, what's your background in men's fashion?
I worked in...
Why should we listen to you?
I worked in menswear for 5 years. I still do from time to time. Whenever I need some help, I'll go over to the shop and sell some suits. And 100% commission sales. And I've seen everything from weddings, funerals, graduations, office work, complete custom-made clothing to bespoke, to tailor, to made-to-measure, to made-in-Italy. I've anything having to do with the refined... I've sold it, I've touched it, I've understood it, I've read about it, and I've lived it for those 5 years that I was working in it.
Yeah, and you've worn it, exactly.
Yeah, like right now I have a walk-in closet that's full of suits and shirts, and I can't wait to keep adding to it.
Yeah, no, that's great. My background is similar, but I guess more I was more entrenched in it at a young age. My family... for generations were what you would call haberdashers, although they were not Jewish. They were men's fashion specialists, men's clothing specialists. We owned a family store for 133 years, since 1875. It was a men's clothing. It actually started as a footwear store, as a shoe store, and turned into a men's clothing store for a couple of generations. So as a kid, I was, you know, kind of in that world, and moving forward, I had an interest and got knowledge from whether that was my father or, you know, other relatives, and, just kind of going to visit the store all the time, really understanding what was sold, what was good fabric, understood how to fold clothes properly to be displayed. So, I always get in into fun arguments with my wife because, she's way better at folding. She does most of the laundry here, but she can fold like a basket of clean clothes in a couple minutes. I will take a long time because I fold everything as if it was a display shirt. Yeah. Cause that's how I was taught.
You're basically like visual merchandising your drawers.
Yes. And not just that though, guys, there is a payoff to doing that. I don't necessarily recommend it cause it takes a lot of time, but if you fold your shirts for display, your t-shirts, everything, you will not have to iron most of the stuff. If you do that after it comes out of the dryer and you fold it properly, you can basically press it with your hands, put them, stack them in your drawer, and your t-shirts will look fine. So so there is a payoff, but it is time consuming.
Yeah, and that store that you're mentioning, like we got our prom tuxedos there. Like that was just part of the community of that store for over 100 years.
Yeah, yeah, it was big for our hometown. So sad when it closed in 2008, but so is it's life. Anyway, so that's my background. I've always had an interest in men's fashion. After that as well, right? When I left and went to school, just men's fashion is always just something I find interesting. And it's nice to have seen it. I mean, COVID hasn't helped because people work from home and it's like suits have, you know, you don't wear suits anymore or don't try to look any bit refined. However, before that, I liked that we saw kind of the reemergence of the man who cares about what he looks like. I thought the 90s were kind of a low point in the 2000s. And then as kind of like the 2010s started, we started seeing men care a lot more about, you know, what their hair looks like. So they would get haircuts more regularly. They would actually try to look a little bit more refined, or if they were trying to wear something, you could tell they put a bit more effort into just wearing an oversized Nike t-shirt or something like
that. Yeah, there's definitely a little niche of guys that put more effort in. So yeah, not to, to drag on too much, what's the what's some of your questions you got for me?
So let's start with, actually, you just talked about, we're both from kind of the refined background. So suits, if you had to put them in order of importance, and you can only have these three suits, you got a blue suit, a black suit, and a gray suit, put them in order from one to three, one being most important to you, three being the least.
Currently, like everything in a 2021 context, gray most important, followed by blue, followed by black. You really want to put the black suit first because you think like that's the, like the most refined. It's the black tie, it's the white tie, it's the funerals, it's the tux. Here's the thing, other than a funeral, you really don't have like a reason to wear a black suit right now. You can, absolutely you can, and if you're in banking or investing, that sort of thing, you can wear it, it's fine. But there's really not that need for a black suit other than a funeral right now. The gray suit is by far the most versatile. You'll, depending on the color and the fabric and the weave, you can get away with it from summer to winter. You can really make it four seasons. You have your most variety for shoes, shoe pairings, shirts, accessories. For the guy who doesn't want to own a lot of suits, has no need for it, just a medium gray suit that's just 100% wool, probably super 120s, fine enough. Then you add a white shirt, a blue shirt, a purple shirt, maybe a black shirt, and you got everything that, that you need for a good little while. The blue suit, kind of very similar to the gray suit, it's going to be as passe-partout as can be. I always find the blue suit is a little bit more business, and you can dress it up to be so, but you can also dress it to be more stylish. Like I think at your wedding, we were both wearing blue suits, and you know, it didn't look like we were coming from the office. It looked like we were going to a wedding.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The blue suit also very versatile. I find in certain occasions it'll be less formal. So if we go back to like the weddings and the funerals, well, especially like the funerals are in the very formal occasions, maybe even going to court. The blue suit will be fine, but a gray suit will most likely look more appropriate. The black suit will look the most appropriate for those very formal things. But other than that, you don't really need it all that much, and you'll get a lot more miles out of a gray or a blue suit.
Yeah. Cool. I would actually have rated them blue, then gray, then black in a 2021 context, but also in a personal context. I just like blue. I know my wife likes blue a lot on me. Blue is, it's more and more common, I think, for formal events and all of these things. So in a 2021 context, I would just say blue for me personally, but I agree. Everything you said is spot on. Gray could even work well in something very, you know, very sad, like a funeral. It still works quite formally, even if you don't have the black suit. Now it's funny. I've just got my dad in the back of my ear. I'm just thinking he would absolutely say, as an old fashioned haberdasher, he would say black without hesitation. I can bet you $1 million he would say black number one. And he is right if we look at an average over time. Like I would agree that if we're talking like versatile, like, hey, what's going to be in fashion if you're 80, like in 20 years, 40 years, 60 years, he's going to say, get the black suit first.
Yeah. And you can't go wrong with the black suit.
Yeah. And I would say again, historically, he's not wrong, but if we're talking about a stylish 2021 context, then I would say blue, you say gray.
So actually, I'll shoot a question to you now, and it ties into what you just said. What do you see the trajectory of men's fashion? Like, how do you see it going without like going like too long on it? Like, if we just take especially the refined archetype, since it's one we understand well, and it's one that's easy to visualize. Like, how do you see the trajectory of men's fashion going?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't really have an answer for you except for speculation. I would say I'm a little sad about it at the moment because there's so much. First of all, there are so many small businesses that are closed. And some of those small businesses are clothing stores, men's clothing stores. So I don't think that's a good start for men's fashion in the future. The other thing is that there are so many people working from home or mostly working from home. So the suit, the tie, that formal wear isn't a thing anymore. And I'm guilty. I'm working from home. So a lot of what I wear, actually, I think the last time I wore a suit this year was once, maybe twice. I wore a tactical turtleneck for New Year's just to, you know, dress up and celebrate. But other than that, I think you and I wore a suit once to have a fun formal call because I don't dress up anymore. So I don't know what to tell you other than I think it's going to be on pause for a while.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot more, not even rugged. I think it's going to be a bit more of a laissez-faire kind of style.
Yeah, if that makes sense. I co-sign that. I don't think the refined archetype is going to go anywhere. It's always going to exist. But the masses aren't going to adopt it as much and aren't going to understand how to adopt it as much. But if you're a stylish man and you understand that archetype, you'll be able to work it to your advantage. You'll be able to wear, say, a nice pair of Dockers or dress pants and then put a sports coat on top. And it's going to look far more refined than 98% of the guys around you, as long as it's congruent with what you got going on.
Okay, what are your... Now that at least I'm thinking more casual right now, what are your thoughts on tank tops for men or camisoles or whatever you want to call them?
Yeah, I don't understand the question.
So what are your thoughts? Do you think there's a use for them on men? Do you think men should wear them? Do you think they look good on men, but only certain men?
No, buddy, that's what I'm saying. I don't see it. I don't understand the question. That's a no. I can't even register that. That's just a no.
Okay. No tank tops for you.
Like when you say tank top, like the hell do you mean? Do you like your belly like, showing? What's going on here?
No, not a crop top. Learn about women's fashion, man. No, a tank top, like a.
Oh, okay, like just sleeveless. A strap
shirt. Sleeveless. Yeah, sleeveless, or you know, strap shirt, whatever you want.
Okay. I mean, you have to have the frame for it. If you're wiry, you're going to look like a redneck. If you're well built, you'll be able to pull it off well. It can easily be part of the rugged archetype, whereas if you're working outside, it's warm out, that sort of thing. It's often worn as an undershirt under your dress shirts to keep your dress shirts clean. And the reason that it becomes rugged is you got shit to do. You're going to take the dress shirt off. That's what you have underneath the dress shirt. Because of the function that you're now working outside, it becomes rugged. Keep it clean. You know, you don't want sweat stains. Keep it tasteful. I know you have a few that have like pineapples on them or like whatever, like more
like beach day or workout.
So there's a way to do it there. I would say it has to fit your frame properly. You don't want them too tight. You don't want them too loose. And if you're overly lanky, it's most likely not going to look best on you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think coming from two, well, originally quite lanky and skinny guys, it's not like I used to be able to pull off shirt like tank tops because I was so slim. Now having, you know, built more muscle and a bit of a frame, I'd say once you have shoulders, it looks a lot better on you.
Yeah, shoulders are key for that one.
Yeah.
All right. We kind of touched on this earlier, but how could you stand out at the office? So assuming that you still have an office to go to, and let's say most guys are wearing, you know, clean pants. I even hesitate to call them Dockers or something like that, or chinos even. But just most guys are wearing a clean pant and like a $20 dress shirt, maybe even a polo, for God's sakes. Like, how do you stand out from the crowd without looking too try hard?
Yeah, great question. I would say, first of all, men and women have downgraded a lot in the last several decades on what they wear to the office. It's become more and more casual. So I think the first thing is you can just dress up a little bit more formally and you will stick out. The amount of times I've worn a suit, whether that's in a formal or casual manner, I could wear a suit with a nice dark V-neck t-shirt under it, something like that. So like a black V-neck, and the compliments I get from both men and women, like, oh, nice suit. Like, oh, that looks so good. And that's just because people don't wear suits anymore. They don't wear suits at work. Something, again, really basic. It sounds silly, but at least where I work or where I've worked historically, most people don't wear a tie. So I'll put on a tie, whether that's with, just a semi-casual shirt and jeans, fitted jeans and dress shoes. People will notice that. In fact, a few times where I'd look, that much more formal, and people would joke, oh, you must have a work interview. That's how you can stick out. Just one more level of formality than your counterparts or your peers at work will do the job. So that could be a tie. That's it. That could be a blazer. That could be a suit that you wear, like I said, formally with a tie, or you could wear it very casually with the t-shirt. That could be, it could be some really nice shoes. It could be some fitted pants. It could be a little pocket square. All those kinds of things add a little bit of an accent and a little bit of a you to your outfit.
And you did a couple interesting combinations there. Two that really stood out to me was the sports coat with the V-neck t-shirt and then the denim with the shirt and tie. So what you're doing there is you're combining archetypes, right? You're still living within the refined, but you're adding rakish when it comes to the V-neck t-shirt, and you're adding rugged when it comes to the denim. So you're still living in that box of refined, but you're accentuating it and you're showing that you know how to do it. And I think that's a big part of why you're getting those compliments.
Thank you. So that was a go-to for me for years, and partly because I did work at museums and in curatorial. So often, and I didn't know which day, sometimes I'd go into the warehouse and work on some artifacts or try to find things. So it was partly that more work with your hands, dusty setting, but still most of my work was done in an office setting or a corporate setting. So I wanted to look a bit more presentable. So next question for you, jewelry. What are your thoughts for jewelry on men? What do you like personally?
Don't overdo it. Plain and simple. Like, it can be very rakish if you want to do like the whole rapper look with the gold chains.
Yeah,
if to the extreme, the Mr. T's of the world, sure, it works. But for your everyday guy, you don't want to go too heavy. If you have a wedding ring, hey, cool, you're married, whatever. Maybe one other ring, two other rings at maximum. Often you'll see men have rings on their pinkies. Those, I think, look pretty cool. Usually you want them to have some sort of significance. So if you're an engineer, you'll have one on your right pinky. If you're a mason, you might have something there. One example, the lead singer from Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant. He's in his 70s now, but he has this great big gold ring with, I believe, a ruby on it. And he wears that on his pinky. It looks very rakish, but also looks very masculine. But he's not running around with like 10, 20 rings on. Just the one, it just adds a little bit of style, right, and that's it.
And he can, because he's part of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, exactly. So I think when it comes to jewelry, you don't want to overdo it. Watches are obviously a good go-to. When it comes to watches, tailor it to your frame, to your lines. So if you're a narrower guy, wear a smaller face watch and a smaller wristband. If you're a bigger guy, you can get away with a bigger face and a wider wristband. And same thing, like, with your clothing. So if you're wearing a very, very tight suit, which you probably shouldn't anyways, but if it's a more form-fitted suit, you're not going to want a big honking watch. It's going to look disproportional.
Yeah. No, I like that. I would say the same thing. I'm not a big jewelry guy. I got my wedding ring and I wear watches, and that's about it. I've even tried necklaces in the past, and they just don't work for me. And I end up finding them uncomfortable because I just find they're in the way or a nuisance. But you have some men who can pull off certain chains and necklaces. But again, I'd say with moderation.
Yeah, and it's with moderation. And again, all comes to congruency, right? To you wearing, I used to have a silver chain. I think I still have it somewheres. And it's one of those things when you're in your early 20s trying to figure out your style, like you kind of get away with it, but you don't really know why you're wearing it or how to pull it off. It somewhat works, but not really. And I think that's kind of where you are with that chain too. It's not congruent to what you're bringing to the table. So might as well leave it at home.
Right.
Okay. So, okay, let's see here. We got one. I got one last one for you. Which style do you archetype, so rugged, rakish, and refined, do you find the most difficult to embody personally?
I'd probably have to go with rakish. However, I do think I'm a bit of all three, and I think it's important to be, you know, a nice blend, but I still feel comfortable with kind of what, you know, what dominates in your style. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, finish your thought, then I'm going to add to something that I notice that you do that is very rakish, but still stays within your box.
Yeah, so I'd say if I'm to, you know, dominate in one of the styles, rakish is the hardest to pull off. Because if you're full-on rakish, you're looking like a Lenny Kravitz. That's not really something I feel comfortable pulling off ever. I don't have that kind of lifestyle or confidence to a certain extent. So that would be the one that's I think hardest to pull off for me, and I'd say for most people.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Most guys are either going to be rugged or refined, rakish. It's really, you have to bring that vibe. So one thing that you do, and let's kind of move to our parting tips there to wrap it up. You have a little forearm tattoo on your left side?
On my right.
On your right? Okay. But you wear your watch on your right side also, right?
Yeah, because I'm left-handed.
Exactly. So one thing I noticed that you do is you'll wear a shirt, you'll roll up the sleeves just enough so you got the forearm tattoo showing on the right side, but you'll also wear your watch on the right side. And if you have a little bracelet, you'll also wear that on the right side. So it's very asymmetrical, right? It's very debalanced. It's not refined. It's very, very rakish, and it's something that you pull off well. It's very subtle, right? And that's something that women are going to notice, especially. Because you could wear the watch on one side, the bracelet on the other, which would make sense, but you choose to stack one side completely, which is very much bucking the trend, which is very rakish. And I noticed you do that last summer. I was like, huh, that's a sharp move, whether you did it consciously or not.
Yeah, it's funny you noticed, actually. I do that with my tattoos in general, too. It's my rule is if I get tattoos, they're all on the right side of my body.
Cool.
So it's an asymmetrical thing. As I am left-handed, I don't know. It's just a thing. Yeah.
So yeah, that's one thing that I noticed that you do that's subtly rakish, but you pulled off very tastefully. One thing I want to cover is just shirts. You know, like when you think refined, you think suits, but if you're wearing a suit, you're going to wear a shirt. And if you're going to wear a shirt, you're not necessarily wearing a suit. So you're wearing shirts a lot more than you're wearing suits. So I just want to do some quick pointers on how a dress shirt should fit. Because you're going to encounter that fairly frequently. So one thing, everything comes down to the fit. That's obvious. The first thing you want to look at is the shoulders. So the seam where the sleeve is going to meet the torso, you want that pretty much right on top of your shoulder. You don't want it coming in towards you, and you definitely don't want it hanging off the side. It's just nice right on top of the shoulder, right where the deltoid meets the bone. That's where you want that seam sitting. Then the next thing from there is going to be the cut. You got, and I'm going to use some parlance that's a little more proprietary to a certain business, but it'll give you the idea. You know, you can have your extreme slim fit shirts, your slim fits, modern fits, classic fits, executive fits, going from the most cut to the biggest. The name doesn't matter. What you're looking for is something that's going to give you a form-fitting look, but it's not going to be baggy and the buttons aren't going to be pulling. I'm a slimmer guy. I still don't wear an extreme slim fit shirt. I wear a slim fit because an extreme slim fit, the buttons are going to pull on me. And that, even though I'm a slimmer, it just doesn't fit right. And that's what matters. So don't try to match like a name or a style to your body. Just take whatever shirts fits. So the buttons aren't pulling, they're not sagging. When you're standing, it's not all crumpled and bagging. You can't kind of grab the sides and kind of like flying squirrel it a little bit. just nice and form-fitted that you have movement. Next thing is the sleeve length. You want the sleeves that when you're at rest, so you're just standing up regularly with your arms by your side, you want your sleeve to just be resting right at the base of your, like where your thumb bone meets your wrist. Yeah. Right at the base of your hand. You're going to want a little bit of extra room in the sleeve, but you don't want it bunching up. So when you raise your hand, say to shake someone's hand, it's normal if the sleeve comes back a little bit, but it's not traveling up your wrist. And it, even when you raise your hand like that, like there's going to be some movement, which is fine. One thing I noticed a lot, having fit hundreds, if not thousands of men, as soon as they put a dress shirt on, they're going to kind of like do a bear hug motion with their arm, like wrapping their arms up in front of them. Like, but it feels tight. It's like, it's supposed to feel tight, but it's not a t-shirt.
Right. And it has something that people don't realize, I guess, is that shirts don't have flex. Like they're not made to be a flexible cotton t-shirt, for instance, or a spandex. Some come with a mix nowadays, but at the end of the day, it's still a tight, like it's a shirt that has no flex. That's what formal wear is to an extent.
Yeah, it's refined, right? You're not fixing the car, you're not chopping wood, you're doing business. So vast physical movements aren't necessary. You still want to be comfortable and be able to walk and do whatever, but you're not doing jumping jacks. So I would say that I'm not even going to bother about color or any or stylistic points. Just make sure the shoulders are in the right place. Make sure you don't have excess fabric on the sides or the front or the back. Make sure the buttons aren't pulling, and make sure the cuff of the sleeve is just resting at the base of your hand without extra folds.
I would add to Jason's kind of in the same boat as me, but I have freakishly long arms. So what happens is that I find a shirt that fits me pretty well in the shoulders and chest. However, it is half of the length of my arms. So I have discovered that unfortunately for me to have nicely fitting shirts for my whole body, including my arms, is that I can't cheap out on shirts. Typically your more expensive shirts are the ones that have that nice fit, especially for the slimmer, taller guy who has the long arms. I have yet to find a decently cheap shirt that I put on that works perfectly with my chest, shoulders, and arm length. That's just a sad reality. So again, it's, you don't need a lot of shirts, but a few nice shirts make a big difference in a wardrobe.
So yeah, I'm not going to go with all my other points. I just kind of want to do shirts 101. How about you, man? What's some of your pointers?
Yeah, so I'll keep on the same kind of track here as t-shirts. So Jason went a bit more with your formal wear. I'll go with your casual stuff. Something I see all the time in men especially is they could look that much better if they knew which size they were or they knew which size to wear. And often there's always this kind of debate, and it can become contentious, is, well, you know, keeping up with the fashion or being fashionable is expensive. And yeah, it's not free, that's for sure. However, you could be a guy that doesn't enjoy shopping, that doesn't need a lot of clothes, and that doesn't have a lot of money. But instead of buying your kind of warehouse logo t-shirts or things like that, that are almost always at least one size too big, you can buy the same price t-shirt somewhere else that is the right size for you, and that is maybe a neutral, more versatile color.
Dude, I get my t-shirts at H&M. In all honesty, I pay $12 for a t-shirt. It lasts me 2 years, good enough.
Exactly. And again, if a $12 or $9 t-shirt at H&M can last you 2 years, I think it's done its job, right? And with those t-shirts, you can wear them, again, you can wear them under a suit. They can be the main shirt under your suit, but they can also be a very casual thing with jeans that you're wearing, you're working on your car over the weekend. So I would say try to avoid, at least as a man, try to avoid logos or things like that maybe diminish the seriousness of your style, and make sure you're getting t-shirts that fit you. And what I would say, for the most part, I see a lot of men who wear shirts that are at least a size too big. Same with suits, by the way. Often men will wear, you know, a 42 when they should be wearing a 40, or a 38 when they should be wearing a 36, because they're really, really small dudes. So you make sure things don't look silly with your shoulders, like Jason said. if the seam seems to actually fit and land at the edge of your shoulders, then you're on to a good start.
And if you want some examples from us personally, you want to see if we know what we're talking about, check out our social media on Instagram and Locals and Facebook. We posted photos mostly from William's wedding, actually. And you'll see what we're wearing. It'll give you an idea, like not to say it's the perfect style or whatever, but it'll give you an idea of properly fitting garments.
Yeah. I would also say too, if you wear things that fit that much better on you, you're that much more inclined to take care of your body as well. And that has always worked for me. If I wear something that's fairly form-fitting, again, don't exaggerate, but if you wear something that's fairly form-fitting, then I feel like mentally it's already encouraging you to work out more, to do more push-ups, to get that chest and those shoulders a little bit tighter so that you can feel like you're filling the shirt out that much more. And I feel that's a nice kind of snowball effect, really, on wearing clothes that fit and working out to make those clothes fit.
Yeah, man. So I think that's a good spot to end. I think we provide some good value here. And as we go, we're going to try to dig a little bit deeper into the things like this and productivity and some actionable items. And we may have a few surprises for you down the road.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks, guys. Thanks once again for taking the time to listen. Hope you learned a thing or two. And we'll be back next week. So find us wherever podcasts are listened to, Spotify, and Apple Podcast, and hopefully we'll be coming out with a website fairly soon. So anyways, you can follow us also on Instagram, Facebook, and locals.com, always under Thought Crimes Podcast. So thanks a lot, guys, and have a good week. Cheers.